At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Future-proof extra from News Talk.
Now, in recent weeks, there's been quite a bit of a stir at both the LHC and the Fermilab in the United States. These are facilities that are investigating particle physics. Scientists believe they may have found a fifth force of nature, which could revolutionize our understanding of the Standard Model and the very properties which govern the universe itself. But what has or hasn't been discovered so far? Well, Dr. Chris Parks is Professor of Experimental Particle Physics at Manchester University and spokesperson for the LHCb collaboration. He joins me now. We've talked about the Standard Model many times on this show, so apologies to listeners who are familiar with it, but maybe we should start there and explain what is the Standard Model.
Yeah, absolutely. Good place to start. The Standard Model is our fundamental theory of the particles that make up all the matter and the way that they interact with each other. The proton and the neutron, which I guess will be familiar to most of your listeners.
Let's hope.
they are made up of three quarks. And those use quarks from the first, what we call the first generation. They use up and down quarks. And then there's a next heavier generation, which has the charm and strange quarks in. And then there is a top heaviest generation, which has quarks which are called T and B. And they can be sometimes be called top and bottom. Or if you're feeling more poetic, they can be truth and beauty.
I see. Okay. So within this model, there are four forces of nature. Isn't that correct?
That's right. Although actually in the Standard Model, there's only three.
Okay, go on.
So the Standard Model is a tremendously powerful theory, and it describes three of the fundamental interactions. So it's got the electromagnetic force in it, which is transmitted by the photon, the particle of light, and that describes electricity and magnetism effects. It's got the strong force, which is the one which binds the quarks together inside the proton and the neutron. So it's a strong binding force that sticks matter together. And then there's also the weak force, and the weak force is the one responsible for nuclear radioactive decay.
Right.
But then there's a fourth one, as you say, which I haven't mentioned, which is gravity.
That's right. Gravity is not in the Standard Model for some reason.
Yeah, it seems quite important on the everyday level.
Before we get into this discovery, why isn't gravity in the Standard Model? Because, I mean, it's pretty easy to identify, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the weird thing is, right, that absolutely on our everyday life, gravity is extremely important for us. And in astrophysics, it's extremely important as well. But when you're dealing with these tiny fundamental particles, then gravity is not important anymore.
It disappears almost.
Yeah, precisely. And it is, you know, I mean, of course, it is a problem, right? I mean, we've got this fundamental theory, our basic theory, and that basic theory doesn't have gravity in it. And, you know, there are some other big questions with this fundamental theory. You know, we believe that at the time of the Big Bang, equal amounts of matter and antimatter were created, and yet everything is made of matter now. So at least quantitatively, where did all the antimatter go? We know from the astrophysicists there is this stuff called dark matter and this stuff called dark energy. That's not explained in the Standard Model either. So yeah, we've got this incredibly powerful fundamental theory. Last block of this Standard Model was put in place, 8 years ago now, when the LHC found the Higgs boson. The theory at some level, you know, okay, it's only been finished 8 years ago, but the at some level, the theory has been there for about 50 years or so now. Mm. It's tremendously powerful, but there's really big things it doesn't answer. So fundamental physics has some really big questions that we'd like to know the answers for.
Right. So this machine or facility in the LHC, just very briefly, to remind people how it works, it's a loopy track in which you smash particles together and then you look at their guts. Is that the idea?
That's not far off, yeah. So it's a 27-kilometer circumference circle, and protons are sent round the circle in both directions.
Can I ask you, when that's done, is it a single proton or is it a bunch of protons?
Each bunch has 10 to the 11. So
a lot,
100,000 million or something in each one, right?
Okay.
Those bunches are brought into collision at four points around the circle, and at those four points, that's where the big experiments are. So there are four big detectors at the LHC. And at those four points, the collisions occur between the protons, and then these detectors look at what's produced and what gets what then decays from what's produced as these particles fly through these big detectors.
And the particle physicists are essentially like investigators at a murder scene looking at blood spatters on the wall. Is that the is that the sort of idea?
The analogy I normally use is like taking photographs.
Okay, okay. All right, so I see
where you're going with
okay.
this.
Because I was wondering, was it a single proton? I was thinking that's a really good aim to be able to find another proton to smash into. But so you get a bunch of protons smash into each other. They explode into tiny pieces, and then you can you do the maths and say, okay, well, here's this bit and that
process.
Bit.
So you get this large number of protons crossing with another large number of protons, and then there is a chance you will get a collision.
Yeah.
And you tune the number of protons and the size of the beam such that you get a small number of collisions every time they pass through each other. At my experiment, when we've been operating for the last 10 years, it's really often been, 0, 1, 2, small number.
Wow.
Some of the others tune it a bit higher, and you have a few more collisions per time. But you can play with the parameters a little bit.
Okay, so that's amazing to think of this enormous facility is enabling the connection of one proton with another.
And it's 40 million times a second that these are crossing with each other. So
wow.
You get,
God, the numbers are amazing, aren't they?
You get to take a lot of photos. I won't go with yours.
So bear with me now as we try and understand this new force question. So there is something called lepton flavor universality, and it is that this thing is sort of at the core of what's going on. Can you explain as easily as you can to non-particle physicists what has been found and why it makes us question what we know about the universe?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go back to what we were just discussing about how there were these three generations of quarks. The other particles that, your listeners will know about is that in the atom around the nucleus, you've got electrons going around it. Well, in the same way as there's the three families of quarks, there are also three families of particles like the electron. So these particles are called leptons, and the electron is the lightest one of them. And then there's a heavy version of the electron, which is called a muon. And then there's an even heavier version called the tau. But let's focus on the electron and the muon for now. Those are the leptons, so that's the lepton word, okay? The flavor word is this, whether they're electrons or whether they're muons. Okay.
So the flavor of a lepton is what type it is.
Yeah, what type it is, that's right. And then the violation is because we have a hint that maybe they're not following the pattern that we would expect in the standard model, okay? So let me go through a little bit about what this recent paper is that we put out. So we've got one of these, we have this proton collision. In the proton collision, you produce some of these beauty quarks that we were talking about. And then those beauty quarks decay. And that's like your murder scene analogy. The particles that we end up getting produced, you know, it produces some final state particles. And in that final state particle set of this particular process that we're interested in, sometimes it contains electrons and sometimes it contains muons, the heavy version of the electron. Now, our theory treats both the electrons and the muons in the same way as each other. So for every time you get this decay and you've got the electrons in the final state, you should have as many decays where you've got the muons in the final state. And it's quite fundamental in the theory. You know, it's
an important part of the theory that you get the same number of muons as you get electrons. Yeah.
Yeah. The only distinction between these is their mass. And for the interactions that we're discussing here, that's not a big effect. So, you know, you really know what the answer is. The answer is you should have one for every one. It's not a complex calculation. Yeah. So what we do is we go away and we look at this process. And this process is very rare, this particular process we're looking at here. You know, beauty quarks probably seem quite exotic to you to start with.
Yes.
But of those beauty quarks, only about one in a million times of that they decay, do they decay in this particular way that we're interested in.
Okay. Right.
So for the experiment LHCb, we've run for about 10 years, roughly, give or take. And we've got a few thousand of these examples, despite the fact that we've been colliding particles 40 million times a second for a good fraction of the year for quite a number of years. Okay. And what we see is that we've got a hint that this ratio between how many of these final states with electrons, how many final states with muons, is not one. Now, it's not a discovery. It's not proof. It's in what we call in particle physics terms, 3 sigma, okay? So it's...
You sort of think this could be a thing, but it's definitely not proof. But it looks likely that it is.
I mean, we are very excited about it because, you know, on a statistical basis, it's got about the likelihood of it being a purely statistical fluke is about 1 in 1,000-ish.
Yeah, okay? They're good odds.
Yeah, they're not bad odds. I mean, if you were to flip a coin, you know, it's like flipping 10 coins and getting 10 heads in a row. Okay, it can happen, but it's not very likely, right?
Yeah.
Now, you know, the converse side to that is, as I said, my experiment's been running for about 10 years. And over that time, we have written over 500 scientific papers, and each one often has multiple results in it. So, you know, if you look at it that from that point of view, well, actually, we
maybe
have
it is.
More than 1,000.
Maybe it is a bit of a statistical anomaly.
Yeah. So, you know, the interesting thing is that it's not just this one result from this paper that we've just put out, but the evidence has been building over the past few years that we've put out a number of results where each of them, not as statistically significant as the one we're talking about now, but they've all seemed to point in the same sort of direction.
Right. If it turns out to be that you've got this ratio wrong, it sounds very insignificant, this weird decay that happens 1 in 1 million times. The ratio is not 1 to 1, but something like 3 to 1. Why is that such a big deal? And what does it say about this standard model, our understanding of the universe? Why would that need to change?
Yeah, the reason it's intriguing, as you say, is because it's a central prediction of this fundamental theory. You know, it's really a hard prediction in this model. So you've got to, you can't, it's not an accident in the model. You would have to, if it's confirmed, you really have got to add something new to the model. You've got to add some kind of new particle or some kind of new interaction, right?
You know, gravity.
Right. Well, not gravity.
We're missing gravity. You need a new force. There you go. Problem solved. You're welcome.
Gravity is not going to do it, but you know, exactly that's the kind of thing people are speculating about. What is this new particle or new interaction that you might have to add into the theory in order to try to explain this hint that we've got?
Chris Parks from CERN, thank you very much for joining us.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.